Well, hello again. Thank you for letting me join you on the Prison Pod. This is Valerie Cartonio, your host, and we have Jonathan Fisher joining us today. He is also a Mainer, which is great to always have someone from Maine. Our podcast goes into all the facilities here in the state, so I love that we have somebody local joining us today. Jonathan has done some quite interesting work, and I came across him looking on films about incarceration. And although his film isn't about incarceration, or his work is around incarceration, along with the many other hats that he wears, but the thing that really grabbed me was a piece that he did, a collaboration on, a PBS piece on New York probation, called In a Whole New Way. And he also has a book by that title. So I hope we're going to discuss that and all the other hats that Jonathan wears.
Good
Good morning, Jonathan.
morning, Valerie.
So great to have you join us.
I'm honored to be here.
I want to jump right in and start talking about this wonderful project that I found online, Seeing Ourselves, combining stories and photography. Would you like to tell us a little about that?
Yeah, Seeing for Ourselves is our nonprofit. It was founded by my colleague George Carano in 2010. We both had retired from a long career at New York's Metropolitan Transportation Authority, and he'd wanted to then devote his life to the visual arts, which was really his true passion. And by a kind of roundabout way, he discovered this field called participatory photography. He actually stumbled onto an exhibit of these kind of photographs in a London church basement in 2002. And what participatory photography is, it's turning over to the camera to people who are usually on this other side of the lens. This was certainly true back in 1992 when it all originated among American aid workers in rural China in 1992. And these women, when they handed cameras to Chinese peasant women, the photographic results were far more compelling than anything taken by local officials. So that's sort of the traditional start of this practice of photography, which has grown by leaps and bounds ever since. And one might think, well, in the age of Instagram, social media, and smartphones, why is this even needed? But even in this era, people find themselves defined by powers much greater than themselves. And so what we by offering, a college level course in the art of visual storytelling and the platform afforded by a widely noticed book, we can counteract negative stereotypes in the media. And certainly people on probation have suffered from that.
Yeah, and that's one thing that I was really excited to see. I would love to see a program like this. I'm like 3 miles from my local probation office here. I just can't imagine how it could change people's lives being able to participate in a program like this. How did you come about getting involved with the probation department to do this project?
Well, our first project was actually in the New York City housing projects, where I was working in 2010, and our founder, George Carano, he approached the top officials of the New York City Housing Authority with this idea that if we embedded ourselves at the housing authority and delivered our programming, we could change the narrative around the housing projects, which had also suffered from a terrible media treatment over the last generation. You look in the tabloids in New York and even elsewhere, all you saw were stories about crime and disrepair. And that had this terrible effect of discouraging the government from continuing to fund the projects, which set off this vicious cycle of even more crime and disrepair and even worse media coverage. And the government backed further away. So this was going on and on and on. And the people in these communities were suffering as a result. So, what we did, we delivered programming and in the housing projects to hundreds of residents of about 15 of these communities in the Bronx, Manhattan, and Brooklyn between 2010 and 2013. In that effort, we used disposable Kodak cameras. It was kind of echoing back to the traditional practice of photography, using film and making each snapshot count, you know, as opposed to what, you know, digital nowadays. And the residents took great pictures. They captioned them themselves. And what we did was collect the most moving photographs, and we combined it with a backstory about public housing. And we put it together in a book, Project Lives, that was published by Powerhouse in 2015. And that had a very big impact. And, you know, won all kinds of awards and international notice, fans including Jimmy Carter and Sonia Sotomayor and Noam Chomsky. But more to the point, the new imagery that was produced in that book brought New York City and State back to the funding table. So that, you know, it really proved the efficacy of participatory photography. It's not just like an arts project that actually has a real world effect. And New York City was so convinced by that, they said, okay, you guys had this success in the housing projects. Can you please take your practice down to 33 Beaver Street in Manhattan, which is where the New York City Department of Probation is headquartered, and deliver your programming there? Because there also the media treatment has been terrible for the last generation. You know, it was really kicked off by the 1970s. Probation had been rehabilitative since its 1841 founding, and had been treated respectfully by the media right up until the 1972 crime wave, and then things changed. The practice became punitive instead of rehabilitative. And the media treatment of probation, ironically, just then began to treat it as a slap on the wrist, if not a joke. And that had a terrible effect on probation chances of completing their program successfully. And it also, you know, even though jurisdictions slowly, as the crime wave receded, began to walk back the practice to its original rehabilitative practice, the continued mockery in the media kind of held things back. And so many jurisdictions around the country, even today, are continuing in that punitive approach where you could be violated and sent back to prison for the most trivial violations. So that's, you know, what we hope to do was to change the media narrative about probation and thereby encourage probation agencies around the country to take their practice back to the original purpose of what, you know, of this criminal justice intervention, which is America's dominant criminal justice intervention. You know, there are more people on probation than parole, prison, and jail combined. And yet it's a black hole of the criminal justice system. Nobody knows about it unless you're on it. And then you're shocked to discover what it all entails. So we thought, that by encouraging a favorable media treatment of probation and encouraging a return to probation's rehabilitative roots, it could be seen more widely as an effective alternative to locking people up. And so, in a sense, it could help undo mass incarceration, which was our ultimate goal.
Well, I think you brought up some really important points here. And one thing is the stigma around incarceration. And when somebody, and the other thing is they lose their power by being incarcerated. So by coming home and having a project like this, this empowers them to show the world through their eyes, not from somebody else's.
Yes.
It shows them in a positive light.
Mm-hmm.
It gives them an opportunity to tell their story, which, as we know, today is so important. So many people need to tell their stories, and so many people need to hear those stories, because we relate to others and we can change and adapt to what we hear from other people and learn from them, from their own experiences. I'm real curious what the probation department, like the probation officers, how they reacted to this program.
Oh, they welcomed us with open arms. I mean, this was, you know, New York City, like I said, New York City pointed us down to the probation department. There were three of us, and we had absolutely no experience or knowledge of the criminal justice whatsoever. You know, so we were newbies. And yet, you know, I think what helped was that we did get a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, which gave us credibility, and we got that through the welcome intervention of U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, who went to bat for us on this project in a big way. So we got that grant, and that convinced the New York City Department of Probation that we were credible and we could be trusted to do the right thing. And so they created a budgeted slot for our photography teacher at the beginning of 2018, and we were off to the races. So Chelsea was, you know, embedded there at the probation department delivering programming. I was the storyteller of the nonprofit. So my job was to go around the department and interview people and kind of learn everything there was to learn about this function. And George Carano, the founder of the nonprofit, was directing both of us in all our activities. So it was three of us trying to pull this off. And the teaching did go slowly at first, you know, and we started in the spring of 2018, I think I mentioned, and we were teaching the class in the seven neighborhoods of New York City, which are the most underserved and where Department of Probation has decentralized its services. So in Brownsville in the spring of 2018, maybe one person would show up for a class, you know, which, you know, was understandable. And we were an unknown quantity to the folks on probation. We didn't look like them, you know, but, you know, word of mouth got around and to the point where now, 6 years later, there's a waiting list of 500 to get into the class. And what's interesting, you mentioned, Valerie, you know, what you asked about what was the attitude of the probation department. One of the things that's most drawn the interest of the probation industry, as we've shown this film around, is that we probation officers took the class in New York. We welcomed them into the classes. And so the folks on probation, they were like floored by this experience. You know, in fact, you can see this right on our website. We have a clip of this of Andre, our, you know, one of our great participants, talking at the American American Association of Probation and Parole at a plenary session where we screened the film last summer, and he's saying, "Wow, I'm in a class with a probation officer, and she doesn't have a badge. She's just like us." I mean, it was a new world.
I love that, because one thing that there's some really good probation officers out there. I don't want to speak negatively, but there's also some that really should probably move on and do something else.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And if you're going to do the job, do it right. You know?
Yeah.
That's how I look at it.
Yes.
I understand the overworked, underpaid, too many hours for the job. Yeah. I totally understand that.
Right.
But we really need good, strong individuals in those positions.
Absolutely.
That are supposed to be assisting and helping people navigate the waters when they come home. And sometimes I don't see enough of that.
Yeah.
There's others that are outstanding at it. So a program like this, to me, is wonderful because it breaks down the barriers between the higher ups and the ones that feel like they're less than.
Yes.
It brings them to a level playing ground. And I also think it can let them see the perspective of the other.
Yes.
Which you don't usually see probation officer to probationer.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Sharon says this in the film. I learned what is important to you folks, you know, and in a way she never did before. It was, you know.
Now, speaking of the film, is this available yet? So anybody can see it?
Yeah. It's on our website in awholenewway.com. It does have a, you know, a rental fee of $2.99, which we used in order to, you know, to continue promoting the film. Hopefully prisons would be able to get this and they would be able to put the book in their prison library. That would be fantastic. But the book is the film. We finished it in 2020 and we weren't even supposed to be doing a film originally. You know, we only did this film because of the pandemic. I think I mentioned that in our housing project initiative, our first initiative, it led to this book, Project Lives by Powerhouse 2015. We were supposed to be doing another book to come out of this probation project. But then the pandemic hit in 2020, and it brought global supply chains to a screeching halt. And that totally disrupted the publishing industry. So we had no hope of getting a book out. And Chelsea and George, my colleagues in the nonprofit, looked at me and said, well, Jonathan, you're the storyteller. You better think of something else. So luckily, we had this footage of interviews with the photographer participants that was made available to me as a resource for writing the book. And when I took a second look, deeper dive into this in my man cave here in Maine, where I am now, I thought, well, wait a minute. You know, these guys are so compelling. You know, maybe a general audience would find them interesting as well. So I just began stitching together that interview footage with any other available footage I could find online. And we employed the magic of fair use that allows you to repurpose. Even if you're repurposing material, then it doesn't matter that the original material is copyrighted. You're still allowed by U.S. law to use that material. And so we got a lot of material, you know, online from TV coverage about probation and other videos that other probation agencies shot. And we licensed footage from stock houses, and I just put all of this together, got the help of True Life Media, which is a video shop in Portland, Maine, did a great job on editing. I mean, I was working on iMovie, and he took everything, put it in Final Cut Pro. You know, it's a whole new level. 2021, we sent it out onto the festival circuit and held our breath. And we were astonished at the reaction. By now, it's been welcomed into over 200 film festivals around the world, won over 70 awards. I mean, people all over the world respond to this tale of American probation. You know, it's not because of me. It's not because of my film rudimentary filmmaking skills. It's because of participatory photography and American probation. I think people all over the world kind of recognize how wonderful probation could be if it's conducted properly, and that everybody, in a sense, owes a debt of gratitude to this country for developing it in the first place. As I mentioned, it's actually a New England innovation. It was the brainchild of a Boston bootmaker in 1841. Happened to be in police court one day and noticed a drunkard about to be, you know, sent away for a few months, and he just got an idea, a light bulb moment. He went to the judge and said, hey, judge, give this guy to me for a few months. Let me work with him, and we'll come back, and you'll see whether you still want to put him away. So John Augustus, which was his name, did his thing, rehabilitated this drunkard over the next few months, brought him back to the court, a totally reformed person. You know, the judge was astonished. And Augustus was off to the races. He just started doing this again and again and again, having enormous success. I mean, he even had, you know, in a sense, he had success as a bail bondsman. You know, of the couple of thousand people who he took under his wing, almost everybody returned to court on schedule, which was, you know, kind of an astonishing record for his time. And he did show that that probation led to less recidivism than locking people up, and was less costly. And so probation was institutionalized by Massachusetts in 1878. And that's kind of the traditional starting date of probation as a legal sanction. And as I mentioned, it then was rehabilitated for a century until that crime wave hit and everything went south.
That's amazing. I didn't know that story. Thank you for sharing it. You may be familiar with Dorothea Dix.
Oh, yeah.
She's my hero.
Uh-huh.
She's who I want to be remembered, like Dorothea Dix,
sure,
for her work.
Yep.
But for those who don't know who Dorothea Dix, she was the first person who went in and really fought for humane treatment for people that were institutionalized, that had mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And she believed in providing them with books.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of those things, you know, if you can empower someone to read,
yeah,
the world's at their hands.
Yes. Yes. No, you make the point. I've listened to a lot of your podcasts recently, and you make that point, and that yeah, it's so true.
So speaking of the book, has that just come out or has it been out for a while?
It
And how can people get that?
can get it on Amazon in a whole new way. It's selling, I think, for $25, which, obviously could be a stretch if you're under lockup right now, but maybe the prison library can get a copy. And I'll give you my email address at the end. I can send a free PDF of the book to anybody incarcerated who wants it. I'd be happy to do that.
That's great. So now we've covered all your stuff that you have done. What are you doing now?
Well, we're on our third project, which is climate change. We sort of tackled the big issues. We did public housing, then we did criminal justice, and now we're off doing climate change. And so we're doing this in Maine, actually. What the project involves, it's encouraging high school students to photograph their climate future. Because in our view, youth have been marginalized in the national conversation around climate change, even though they have the most skin in the game. And they didn't cause the problem in the first place. That was people in my generation. So, if we think if high school students, took photographs representing their view of the risks to their futures, and self-captioned them like as in our past practice, and we amplified those self-captioned photographs through gallery exhibits and film and publication like we did in the past, that could help to amplify their views in the national conversation around climate change, which would be good for all of us.
I love that. Unheard voices, love it. So often we don't listen to our young people. These are going to be our leaders.
That's
These are going to
right.
be the people that are going to be taking care of us. They're going to be our lawmakers, our policy changers. They need, and this is where it's so important, especially even at junior high level, that these voices are at the table. What an important job you guys are doing here with around climate change. I mean, look what we've done to destroy this earth, and what are we leaving behind for them?
Exactly. And we did the I did the proof of concept here in Cape last April in Cape Elizabeth, in cooperation with Cape Elizabeth High School and Thomas Memorial Library, the local public library here. We recruited four students out of the high school, including my son, to go around Cape Elizabeth taking photos, and they developed captions for them. And that was done in April. I collected all the pictures. It was the basis for our application for another National Endowment for the Arts grant to conduct a full-scale program in the 24-25 school year, we're hoping. But in the meantime, those photographs were then exhibited by Thomas Memorial Library here in Cape Elizabeth. It was supposed to be just November. It wound up being held over through January to coordinate with the town's development of its cl own climate action plan. And then there was a virtual discussion with the student photographers and the townspeople. And all of that now is going to be the basis of our Kickstarter campaign, where we're also trying to raise funds for the full-scale program to be conducted in the next school year. So we're going on two tracks, where we've applied for another National Endowment for the Arts grant, and we're conducting a crowdfunding campaign in April, and we're hoping with that to get enough money to equip and train hundreds of high school students, both again in Cape Elizabeth, Maine, and also down on Long Island in New York, where our executive director lives, and where there are students on Native American reservations, which we would love to include in this project. Maine isn't very diverse, right? And we'd certainly like to have other kinds of voices and other kinds of eyes involved than simply the ones in Cape Elizabeth.
Wow, that's amazing. I just love what you're doing. Love it. I'm always looking for people that are Mainers that are doing something. They really portray us not too well up here. We're all fishermen, That's all we do. Hang up. But, well, Well, geez, we've covered so many subjects. I'm wondering if there's anything we might have forgotten. I want you to make sure to give all the plugs before we wrap things up of how people can get in touch with you,
right?
The film and the book again, a quick.
Okay, yeah. The website for the film and book is inawholenewway.com. You can watch the film for the $2.99 rental fee. There's a link to Amazon for ordering the book. My email address is info at seeingforourselves.org. Seeing for Ourselves is our nonprofit. So info at seeingforourselves.org. If you shoot me an email, I'd be delighted to hear from you. And certainly, and if you'd like a free PDF of the book, You're Incarcerated, absolutely, I'd be happy to send you that. But also try to get it in your prison library. That would be great if many people could access it. Because we do look upon ourselves as an alternative to lockup. I'm so inspired by people who have been locked up and turned their lives around. You've had Cardell Sims on your own show, and there are so many others like him that I've come to know through our effort. Bruce Bryan served 25 years in a New York City prison for a crime he didn't commit. And he finally got clemency from the governor last year without acknowledging he committed the crime, because he didn't. It was a corrupt DA. And now he's with Queens Defenders, devoting his life to criminal justice reform. There are so many others like him and Cardell who are just, doing great, great work as soon as they get out of prison. And I, to survive that experience is just astonishing to me. In preparation for this podcast, Valerie, I rented Birdman of Alcatraz last night, because my generation, I'm 73, so that came out in 1962 when I was 12. That was my first exposure to this whole concept of turning your life around in prison. And to me, I haven't finished the film, but it holds up. I mean, it's just inspiring that people can do that. I'm floored by the strength of individuals who not only survive prison, but completely transform themselves in a way that helps so many others.
I'm always amazed at I work with men on death row, and I'm amazed that they can every day get up and still do things for other people.
Yeah.
Because I think I would just want to pull the blanket over my head and not exist anymore.
Yes. Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And they get up, and not only do they get up, they have goals, and they're writing, and they're doing things for other people. They're being hospice workers. They have amazing lives in there, even though they're there maybe for a horrible crime, but they're still human beings that have stories. And you talk about second chances.
Yes.
There's no second chances when you take someone's life away.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't want to get on that subject before we close out. But anyways, I love the work you've been doing. I can't say enough good about it. I really hope that we're going to stay in touch, because I want to pick your brain on a few projects.
Sure thing.
But I do have one quick question.
Yeah.
Now, today, do you still use film, or are you using digital?
Oh, yeah. We call it a film, but it's digital cameras. And yes, that's what it is. It's digital cameras. So it's digital, but, filmmakers like calling what they do film as opposed to video. Video conveys YouTube, and cheesy kind of platforms like that. But films live on Vimeo, which is the filmmakers platform. And that's what all the festivals, they want to see a film there, not on YouTube. So I think I mentioned that if you email me, I can give you a free PDF of the book. I'll also give you a free link to the film. If you're incarcerated, you send me an email, I'll get you that too.
Great, because I know a lot of the guys do have access that are in the education programs.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to remind our listeners, we've had Jonathan Fisher with us here today. Thank you so much for joining us, Jonathan. It's been a lovely visit.
Thank you, Valerie. I'm honored to have been here.
And I'll see you back in a few weeks, guys.